to improve the yield?
Well, I would say that we have done, that's the kind of testing you do to find what kind of defects you have.
Well, do you cut metallization and try to isolate an MOS or transistor?
Well, you can usually test. You can see if it's a pinhole, and it's evident you're gauge shorted to this substrate. You know, you don't have to cut it open to see that.
If I understand your question right, you're really asking what are the problems in making multilayer LSI? That is, what have the physical problems turned out to be? Is that?
The intent to, let's say, isolate transistors within a circuit in order to find out if the betas are low and then relate that back to the process.
Well, you're interested in the process control aspect of it.
Right.
Well, I would say that, I don't want to monopolize the conversation, but the type of mistakes that we find in our yield evaluation wafer, the type of flaws, are metal buses being shorted together, metal buses being open, and pinhole shorts. These are quite prevalent, where the gate is shorted to the substrate. That's what you see. The other types of failures, that is, I'm talking about MOS, of course, odd gains and so forth, that don't seem to be as prevalent.
Of course, the management tends to keep trying to tell us that processing is a science, and the process manufacturers keep trying to tell us it's a black magic art, and so there's always in between. Obviously, the processing game is fairly well defined for standard IC types, if you will.
This was dealt with a little bit this morning, and during the early development of the large-scale array, the kind of analyses that you're talking about are very productive because you have specific things that are wrong. There's a mask error, two lines are too close together, or the diffusion depths are too deep. During the initial period, this type of reject analysis, and then going back and changing the process, the iterative thing, works you up quite rapidly. And then you zero in on a sort of an asymptotic curve to a level where you're dealing with this general defect problem. And then that kind of analysis isn't really very productive in my experience, because by then you sort of know what the problem is, and you just don't know how to solve it at that point in time to any greater degree than you have.
Yeah, I think when you're dealing with large arrays and getting reasonable yields, you're talking about individual yields on the transistors of 98.5, 99%, and you've taken care of most of the obvious thing, and it's that last 1% or so that's causing you a problem in an array every once in a while, and they're pretty random in their causes, pinhole shorts. You name it, you'll get one of each now and then.
At that point, it's much more productive to analyze special test vehicles that you have put on the wafer that are designed to show you these specific kinds of pinholes or open resistance vias or what have you that you can have, rather than go into the circuit and try to use that to tear it apart and find out what the problem is. By that time, you know what the problem is. You can design a vehicle to put on the chip, which is a lot easier to analyze the level of problem with than to use the circuit itself.
Wired wafer. You're talking in terms of three layers of metallization. What type of insulation do you use? Is it SiO2 between the layers of metallization?
It's SiO2 and also a sputtered silane.
I see. Do you have any problems with holes in this specification layer that will short metallization layers together?
Not significantly. This is again a kind of a quality control function now in terms of keeping the area clean, the mass clean.
Do you have a number for the surviving number of wafers that come out working the way they are expected? Typical wafer?
No, I don't.
You know.
Mr. Herzog, can I ask a question? My question is in two parts. First of all, regarding the fabrication of your special mask, you know, the double layer of chrome separated with SiO. Can you comment on the fabrication? And secondly, how much extra mask life do you pick up as a result of the non-contact printing you have?
The fabrication of the chrome masks are relatively standard, except for this redundancy step. It's a chrome mask, photoresist etching, then a deposition of oxide on top of it, and then a second layer of chrome and photoresist etching again of the chrome. Now the top pattern is made somewhat smaller so that it doesn't go out quite as far. It's a different mask on the top layer, but it's basically the same.
Yeah, but how does this redundancy affect the edge, sharpness of the edge of the patterns? You
know? Well, that's why the top layer is slightly smaller than the bottom layer. The bottom layer is the one that does most of the definition of the edge, and the top layer merely fills in the pinholes in the bottom layer.
Do you have a protection for the chrome? Do you have a protective coating for the chrome surface?
I don't believe so.
Yeah. The second part of my question, how much extra mask life do you pick up as a result of...
Tremendous. I don't know the details on some of the final masks that were used for the arrays, but during the initial investigation on a test wafer of transistors, the same masks were used for 3 months of production before we felt they had deteriorated.
At least an order of magnitude.
Definitely. Several orders of magnitude.
Yeah, several orders of magnitude.
This question here in Cash's part, I'm interested in what all members of the panel feel is necessary to 100% our amateur test of the LSI part.
Let me respond first. I think I covered that before. I think in the early stages, after you've developed an array, that it's quite essential. In production, you would never do that. It's a design check, yes. I feel that's an essential design check.
Again, you may need a test vehicle to make sure that the process is doing what it was supposed to be doing, but it'll be a lot simpler than the array itself. And if it's fast enough, then the array, you know, is fast enough.
This is, again, one of economics in one way. In terms of our shift register array, it's very easy to dynamically test it. And so we dynamically test it over the temperature range and certify it accordingly. In terms of random logic, it's a little more difficult. If it's an up-down counter, that would be easy to dynamically test and characterize. So some of it's a function of the complexity involved.
I think we'll take about three more questions.
My question to Mr. Witt is referring to your discussion
wafer. During final test, if a wafer fails, do you have any recovery techniques? Can you repair the wafer under certain conditions, or do you discard the wafer?
Well, it depends to some extent on the degree of repair that's required. I don't think it's any secret that you can do ball bonding on top of a wafer. Just as Mr. Campano is doing at Litton, he's ball bonding interconnecting cells on the array itself. You need pads or you need surface area to do this with. If we see a metallization pattern that is obviously open, an open circuit type of thing that we can get to, it's easy enough to ball bond a jumper across it. In terms of the shift register array, we have the power distribution on the clock bus. We need such a large amount of cross-sectional area to carry the currents that we literally put on a couple of twisted gold wire pairs to carry the current in support of the metallization that we have on there already. In terms of defects, you can do repair work. Beg pardon? I'm not quite sure I understand that one.
Some yellow wire.
Something like when they short out a gate or something.
Oh, yes. That's very easily done. In our GP computer, as a matter of fact, in the development of that, we went through the logic partitioning and the logic implementation, and then suddenly they got around to figuring out they ought to do some simulation. And so we had to zap out a couple leads and change a couple gates around. And we can do this on the array, provided we have access to those particular gates, or we simply change the interconnection program. In other words, the program going into the computer, change the interconnection card list, and the computer comes up with a different routing. So we can reprocess very simply, and this is one of the things that we feel has the strongest asset in this discretionary program, the ability to change, the ability to prototype or breadboard. The economics here is they're significant in terms that the component trade-off count, actually the component cost to the equipment house is probably the least expensive part of his equipment cost. And making this trade-off in the testing or in the implementation is easy enough. It costs you money to wire wrap a panel.
And all we're saying is, you want to change a wire, we change a card in the data deck.
One more question. Man in front there.
Mr. Field, in your talk on the computer-aided design, I was not aware that the standard cell approach to computer design was a production reality now, but evidently this is so. Can you tell me like which of the semiconductor vendors you were talking about, or is it just one, or are there a number of them that have this?
Well, it's our standard cells, yes. Now, the program we had, we first of all had to learn how to develop these circuits. So we learned the design rules for doing this from our semiconductor supplier. And he essentially taught us how to do this kind of design work over a period of a few weeks. And then we developed these standard cell test arrays, which were oriented to checking out the validity of the designs and comparing these against the performance which we had previously calculated using some transient analysis type programs. And after this, then, we entered into our computer, not his. You see, these are our standard cells. And the semiconductor supplier could care less which cells we use as long as we followed his design rules. Yeah, now, I think this is very, very important to achieve the kinds of costs that we feel we have to. The people who are processing these chips, the girls on the line, the girls who are doing the wire bonding, the mask alignment, and so forth, they should not be able to tell the difference between chip A and chip B. If they can, they have to do something different. And every time they do something different, that adds cost. So our designs are such that if we had 100 array types and you had the same line fabricate all 100, there would be very, very few things different that can be detected by the people doing the work on those chips to come up with standardized fixtures and packages and so forth.
Very good. I'd like to conclude our afternoon session by thanking our panel for listening to your questions. And that's it.